Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rocking and rolling on this 4th of July edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Michael Lombardi today. Very fortunate to have the one and only Adam Burke sitting in the chair here live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, and I am living on cloud nine today because it's hot dog eating contest day. They're very, like, this is like my Super Bowl, I feel like. Aside from the actual Super Bowl, this is summer Super Bowl for Stormy.
Well, and it was your Super Bowl based on the way you were acting and reacting as you were watching today's contest. And that was with no money on the line because we can't bet it out here in Nevada. But you were still very, very much into it and engaged.
I was cheering for my hypothetical bets, you know.
There you go.
I loved Mickey Sudo over the 40 and a half hot dogs and buns eaten prop. She hits that with about 2.5 minutes to spare. She, by the way, wins her 10th mustard belt today. Just an animal on the women's side, setting a world record of 51 hot dogs and buns eaten. Then on the men's side, we had a new champion for the first time in a long time because Joey Chestnut, who has won, 16 of the last 17 and just set record after record, he's not a part of the competition this year. Nathan's hot dog eating contest said, no, you want to do this deal with Impossible Foods, then you cannot compete on the 4th of July. He was heartbroken, but that created some opportunity from a betting standpoint for somebody else, a little parity on the men's side. And it ends up being Patrick Bertoletti who cashes as a plus 850 underdog, scorching the competition today.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, scorching, you know, the weather was really, really bad last year. You know, it was very humid. And, you know, we've had some days like that, obviously, there at Coney Island. But today, the conditions very, very optimal for the gluttonous hot dog eating contest. And I got to say, you know, I mean, I didn't handicap this. In fact, I had no idea how invested you were in the hot dog contest. You didn't give me a heads up on that before we did the show.
I mean, that's not a thing that people typically like go up to someone else and ask, like, oh, how excited are you for the hot dog eating contest? I'm probably the only person that does that.
That's true. You may be. But that being said, for Patrick Bertoletti to only be getting 7% of the bets based on the DraftKings betting splits, be plus 850 for a guy that has eaten 34 dozen oysters in 8 minutes, 42 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in 10 minutes, 21 pounds of grits in 10 minutes. Maybe the market kind of missed one here.
Maybe. Oh, God, that just sounds like painful.
11 8-ounce corned beef sandwiches in 10 minutes.
The one that gets me, because of the brain freeze element of it, Mickey Sudo holds the record for the women, 16 and a half pints of ice cream in 6 minutes. And you and I both are ice cream aficionados.
Yes,
that
yes.
is a lot.
I also, I like to enjoy ice cream. The last thing I want to do is try to eat it in bulk.
That's the way I feel about the hot dog eating contest. My only negative, because I mean, this is 10 stars across the board. I am a huge 4th of July hot dog eating contest fan. But I love hot dogs so much that it does make me a little bit sad that people aren't able to stop and enjoy it. They're just stuffing it down. But to those of you, Adam, you included, to those of you at home that have the audacity to say, I can't watch it, it's gross, grow up. What are we doing? It is incredible television, Adam.
Shots fired. I need to slide over a little bit more here on the desk.
You know I adore you. I just don't adore your hot dog eating contest takes.
It's so gross. I mean, just like soaking it in that giant, you know, fountain drink cup of water, presumably water. And as you mentioned, like some people don't even use water, right? Some people are using something else.
So yeah, and I don't know if it's fruit punch or Powerade or what it is, but whatever the red beverage is that some people dunk them, and Jeffrey Esper was one of them who ultimately came in second on the men's side, but the hand just gets stained with the red and it looks like there's an injury or something that has happened there. It just looks wrong.
Is it a texture thing, right? Maybe make your hand a little bit stickier so that you've got better grip. I don't know.
I don't know, but I do feel for Esper, though, in this spot, who has come in second. He's been the runner-up. This is now 4 years running, 3 times to Joey Chestnut. You think that this is the opportunity where the door is open for you to bust through and finally win, and he comes in second again. That's got to be so hard to take, to stomach, one might say.
Hey, let me gather myself after that. This is a horrific comparison that I'm about to make.
Can't wait.
But people that train for the Olympics, right? Like, it's once every 4 years. And if you don't make the team, no. You have 4 years to wait. Now, Esper has a whole nother year to wait to give it another run. And I believe you mentioned he's kind of past his eating prime.
He's 49 years old. So a lot of folks think that he's getting over the hump. And that's why some people were willing to take a plus money shot on some of these young bucks that are up and coming in the MLE, Major League Eating ranks. And because you did do the Olympic comparison, I do have to mention, I don't know if you ever watched the Joey Chestnut Kobayashi 30 for 30 thing that ESPN put together a few years back, but Chestnut was talking about the way that he preps for these events and the way he stretches his mouth and he does burping exercises. He also does something that's a little bit disturbing. He says he does a full cleanse for the first days leading up to, needs to be fully empty. I wish we could choose different verbiage for that, but that's Joey Chestnut, okay? That's what he says, who, again, did not compete in the 4th of July hot dog eating contest today, but he and Kobayashi are going to do a Netflix special on Labor Day, which I think should be pretty cool. My last thing on this before we move on. 4th of July, as far as holidays go, where does this rank for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, you know, growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, you don't get a whole lot of great weather days and specifically a whole lot of great weather holidays. So I would say it's a top three for me.
I think it's pretty up there. Stephanie Kamerschak, who produces the show on Fridays, she like brought this to my attention, things that I hadn't really thought of last year on this time, where she was saying it's great because you have the best food. There's no like religious connotation, so nobody's excluded, no pressure to see family or in-laws if you don't want to.
No gifts.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to worry about buying presents or anything. Just go out there, enjoy some good food with your friends, go to the pool, go to the lake, whatever you're going to do. So this 4th of July is very high. And of course, because you get on the corner of Surf and Stidwell, the Coney Island Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Priority one. In addition to the contest today, though, plenty of Major League Baseball games going on, so we might as well go from America's holiday to America's pastime. Any games that you're keeping an eye on right now or looking at still to come?
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on this Reds and Yankees game. I don't have any play in it, but the Reds actually going for a sweep of the Yankees at Yankee Stadium here, up 2-0, top four. They got a runner on first, Marcus Stroman and Frankie Montas in this one, and the Reds are a team that I mean, a lot of these teams have played 85 plus games, right? So you've got a significant sample size, and I am a data-driven handicapper when it comes to MLB. So I do need, you know, that measure of sample size. The Reds are remarkably inconsistent. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they swept the Dodgers at home May 24th through the 26th. They had a big winning streak to start out the month of June early on in that month. And like, they're still not that much of a factor in the wild card race because they've been so inconsistent. And here they are with a chance to sweep the Yankees at Yankee Stadium where, you know, I mean, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto are both playing. You know, the Yankees are, it's not like they have a ton of significant injuries or anything like that. And for the Reds here, I think it puts them in a really strange position because you have the trade deadline coming up here at the end of the month. Like the way that they play in this series against New York, the way that they swept the Dodgers earlier this year, like if you're the front office, you're kind of thinking, okay, this is what we're capable of. But they're also a team, even if they win today, still three games under 500.
Reds up 2-0 right now in the top of the fourth. Other scores to update you on. Cardinals and Pirates in the bottom of six, both tied at one. Another tie game, 3-3. Astros and Blue Jays in the top of the fourth. Boston leading the Marlins 1-0. White Sox down to the Guardians 3-1, which I'm sure just makes you feel good as a Guardians fan, Cleveland guy in general. And the Twins up on the Tigers 4-3.
I mean, that's a team you have to beat. I mean, if you're the Guardians, that's a team you have to beat because, you know, the Twins are playing better here, although Royce Lewis is hurt again, which you talk about, you know, traditions and all that kind of thing. It's a tradition for Royce Lewis to get hurt every couple of weeks, it seems like. So, you know, the Twins are making a charge, but, you know, when you're playing teams like the White Sox, you have to win those games. You have to make sure that you're not giving up any ground in the division. This is the rubber match here today, so, you know, definitely hoping Cleveland is able to prevail. The other one, you know, that's kind of interesting here to me today is the Tigers and Twins, actually, where the Twins, they've already scored four. They're knocking on the door to score some more. That offense has gotten it going here of late. Again, losing Lewis, hopefully it's not anything that's long-term or anything like that, but, you know, he's been such an impactful player when he's been in the lineup for them. So, you know, the Twins are a team that I'm a little bit concerned about as a Guardians fan, and the Royals are a team that, hey, at home, I mean, they're hitting like the Orioles, and on the road, they're hitting like the White Sox. So, you know, hopefully they play on the road a little bit more frequently here.
Adam is our resident MLB expert, by the way. He has daily write-ups on VSiN.com each and every day looking at his best bets for the day. He also hosts the Double Play podcast with Dustin Sweetelson on the DraftKings Podcast Network. So crushing it from a baseball standpoint. And we talked in the last segment briefly, and I did just want to bring it up for this last minute and a half, about all of the conference realignment in college football. The one we didn't really touch on was Texas and Oklahoma moving to the SEC. And the only reason I didn't go into that a lot was because we've known this was happening for such a long time. And that's what created the ripple effects for all of the other moves that we discussed in last segment, which, by the way, if you did miss any of hour one, you can always download it in podcast form wherever you get your podcast. But as far as Texas and Oklahoma joining the league, you have one team in Oklahoma that, just as far as a program goes, a lot of historic success in college football. And Texas, who's at the top of their game right now, they're the third shortest shot to win a college football national championship this season.
And Texas will earn it. You know, if they're able to make it into the playoff, they got a game in week two at the Big House against Michigan. Although Michigan, obviously, very significant roster turnover. J.J. McCarthy, first round pick. You know, they lose Blake Corum. They lose Jim Harbaugh. And maybe Sharon Moore is a dude. I don't know. But what I do know is that it was Harbaugh coaching up the team throughout the course of the week. And Moore was just the guy going out there on Saturday and kind of making sure that things didn't fall apart. So I don't know what kind of head coach he is. So I think Texas is in a pretty good spot, despite, you know, the tough road game there at the Big House. But I'm looking at October 12th and October 19th. Red River rivalry against Oklahoma. Neutral site game, of course, at the Cotton Bowl. Then they play Georgia October 19th. And again, you have additional margin for error now that there are 12 teams in the playoff. But those are kind of big measuring stick games for the Longhorns here this season.
Georgia, a favorite to win a national title, as well as in the SEC, plus 200 to win an SEC title, followed by Texas at plus 320. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Josh Ingles of Covers.com is going to join us. I'll let you keep getting your baseball on, and then plenty of NFL still to come throughout the rest of this hour. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Stormy Bonantoni here, Adam Burke in for Michael. Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL Betting Guide. This thing is jam-packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for each, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, and of course, future bets from our VSiN experts, including awards markets like MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, the list goes on. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, this NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed wagering this season. Head to VSiN.com/guide to get your copy now. That's VSIN.com/guide. This is the Lombardi Line. Speaking of the NFL, our next guest covers the NFL, the NHL, Major League Baseball. The list goes on and on. Josh Ingles joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, betting analyst over at Covers.com. You can follow him on X at Covers_Josh. And before we get into all of the sports that you cover in depth, did you enjoy the hot dog eating contest today? Because this is like, this is my favorite thing of the summer. I'm so stoked on what happened this morning.
I am sad to say I've missed it. I got the kids home, been doing a couple hits, sweating out. Everybody wants afternoon baseball, the MLB, until you have seven plays on the go and you're flipping between that and you're working and really trying to get this work from home with kids home. But fill me in. Did the favorite win? Or did the other plus 200 guy win?
On the women's side, the favorite, Mickey Sudo, blew everybody out of the water. On the men's side, it was a guy named Patrick Bertoletti, who was plus 850, who ended up beating the field. So it was fun. You'll have to watch it on replay, but we do appreciate you
over
diving.
Over under 50.
Hey, over 58.
Final dog count. 58.
Hot dogs and buns.
Whoa.
I know.
That's awesome.
But we appreciate you diving into all of the Major League Baseball numbers. So, Adam, I'll let you take over. We can get into that.
Well, let me ask first. Josh, Stormy, do you guys eat 58 hot dogs in a year?
No. I eat a lot of hot dogs.
Yeah.
Are you a hot dog person?
Lifetime? I don't even think I'm at 58. 58 is a big, big number.
Well, we'll see how many baseball fans can consume at the ballpark today.
Probably a lot of them, because all 30 teams in action here today. That's why we only had three games on Monday, because we have everybody in action here today on the July 4th holiday. And Josh, you know, you got a trio of player props here that you're taking a look at, including one in the Giants and Braves matchup. And the Braves, rough offensive season for them. They've been very bad against right-handed pitching here throughout the last 30 days. What are you looking at with Logan Webb in this matchup?
Just expect Logan Webb to continue to have easy outings, especially versus this Atlanta offense, who, Jared Kelenic starting things off, and then their bottom third looks like Duvall, Wall, and Short. So not the same, obviously, Atlanta offense that we're used to. Under 1.5 walk for Logan Webb, one of the best command pitchers in all of baseball. He's hit the under in 10 of his last 18 and 6 of his last 8. This is kind of being priced more on a little blip that he's had in the middle of the season where he went multiple walks over 3 straight games. But he's a guy that settled it down. This is one of the better plus EV props from the projections over at Covers and EV Analytics. Love this. Projected for 1.13 walks. Slight rain delay. There is a lot of rain risk today. Not like heavy, but could be some delays out there. That always works well with the unders. And the only thing that doesn't really give me a green check mark on this handicap is that Webb's on the road in Atlanta, but he's 4-1 to the under on this over his last 5 road starts. So he is comfortable on the road and has a ton of command.
Another game coming up later on tonight, 5:10 Pacific, 8:10 Eastern. The Rays, a slight road favorite, -125 at the Royals. And you have a prop there you're looking at?
Zach Eflin. I mean, who doesn't like Kansas City, especially at home? But Zach Eflin is a situation. I mean, he's +145 to go under 17.5 outs. Now, the most important thing if you're an out market better is pitch count. And Zach Eflin is a guy who barely touches 90 pitches a start. He's projected for 85 and 16.8 outs. He's going to have to be very efficient just to get to that number. And he's hit this in 5 of his last 9 starts. But at +145, that's really profitable. It's going to be a hitter's umpire behind the plate. That's a great spot. It's a road start. I think that's a really important thing that we don't factor in as much for pitchers. And all 5 middle relievers should be available for the Royals today. Little rain risk as well. So there's a lot to like for Eflin, especially that pitch count to go under 17.5 outs of big plus money.
Well, Josh, as I mentioned in an earlier segment with Mike Somich, I mean, the Royals offensively at home are on par with the Orioles, whereas on the road, the Royals are on par with the White Sox. So getting Eflin here on the road, and also, you know, Eflin, a guy that pitches at Tropicana Field, very good pitchers park down there in Tampa. You put him out in the elements. Obviously, it's hot and humid, as you mentioned, some rain threats out there as well, which, you know, sometimes that can help the ball carry a little bit more. You mentioned something I think is really interesting, too, that we should expand on a little bit. In terms of these props, looking at, you know, home road splits and understanding where the game is being played, kind of pushing you in a certain direction with player props.
You touched on it. You touched on the fact that his home games are in Tropicana. I know we look at it when we have Coors guys, but Kauffman Stadium is the second biggest stadium in all of baseball. It's a really good hitter's park just because of the size of it. You can get knocked around and it decreases strikeouts. So it's another one to target, obviously not as much as a factor or not as well known as Coors, but you go look at pitchers' road splits. There is a very concerning thing about how comfortable guys are with their 17 starts on one and then their 17 starts on different mounds. So there is a thing, and it's something that I really look into.
One more here for today with the Dodgers. You're rooting against human achievement with Jason Hayward. Why?
That's the best way I've ever heard that. I love betting under hits. I think it's a great market, especially if you can project guys to get pinch hit or pinch run for, or just guys in general who aren't hitting the ball well, like Jason Hayward. Under 0.5 hits, got it at +140 this morning. Pinch hit risk is massive. If you can project that, that's great. It's not always priced in. The guy's hitting .203 since June 1st, so he's not great. 19 starts since June 1st. He's gone hitless in 11 of those. And when you're talking +150-ish for pricing, that's extremely profitable. He was pinch hit for yesterday. He's facing Zach Gallen, who a lot of question marks in his first game back. What did Zach Gallen do in his first game back? Absolutely pushed. One hit allowed over 6 innings. And we just need Jason Hayward to start, which is a big thing, and to hit in the bottom third of this LA order. So give me some Jason Hayward against human achievement, as you put it, Stormy.
Josh, I'm not really a big guy when it comes to player props. I mean, you know, the betting options are definitely a little bit more limited out here in Las Vegas than they are in other parts of the country. So there are different things that you kind of have to prioritize and different things that you have to kind of focus on with your handicap. But in terms of the player prop markets for Major League Baseball, are a lot of these odds kind of boilerplate? Are they mostly the same kind of day in and day out? Or do you see, you know, the markets kind of picking up on maybe some small sample size trends or adjusting prices based on matchups?
It's a really great question. And day-to-day, a lot of my stuff is not originated from, it's basically bottom-up, looking at projections from EV Analytics. I mean, there's a thousands of MLB prop markets available and prop bets. But in that same sense, you'll see them catch on to stuff like Jason Hayward under 0.5 hits plus 140. If he continues this way, if he continues to get pinch hit for it, you'll see it drop down to sometimes even money. But this is a race. If you're not an MLB prop bettor, show me a guy who bets first thing in the morning. I'll show you a guy who's beating closing line value every time. 7:30 to 9:30, get your picks in there. You can close 150 points better than closing line value in these markets. They're pretty soft, and it's basically bettors who are making them efficient for book.
Awesome advice. Josh Ingles of Covers.com, by the way, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You also do a great job covering the NHL, and I feel like since the Panthers won the Stanley Cup a couple weeks ago, it has been go, go, go with the draft right away, free agency getting underway. Any of these big moves, players that have switched teams, that have changed your thought process on another team, or even futures that you're looking at here already in July?
I mean, it's not the same as like the NBA market where one player will swing a market as much, but I've seen teams like, I got on Stanley Cup odds, as you see down there. I got on Tampa Bay at 30. I mean, it's only 25-1, but there's spots where they got rid of Stamkos. They brought in Gensel. They get Vasilevsky for the entire year after he missed 2 years. And this is a team that had been doing deep Stanley Cup runs consistently. And now they actually get some time off to, I don't know, rest and lick some wounds, but that's not a bad side. There's a lot of steam going on teams like the Devils just because they bring in a lot of pieces. They got a new coach. That's not always a recipe for success in the NHL. So I think it's kind of Panthers, Oilers, guys at the tops there. But I think there are some pieces down there in the 25-20-1 that wouldn't be bad long shots in that. But I mean, the other markets are open. We're talking President's odds. So DraftKings, 850 right there, Stanley Cup odds. They have them as a president at plus 600, but you can shop around for the Oilers for 10-1 to win the President's Trophy. After they brought on Knobloch, the best winning percentage in all of hockey, they're better. They've added some depth in the top six. Like those guys, you're looking for a Calder guy, take Logan Stankoven from Dallas, plus 600. The guy has 24 games played already, plus 19 in the playoff. The cutoff for the Calder is 25 games. He has such an advantage over the competition, and he's actually going to play top 6 minutes. So there's lots of soft markets right now as things kind of dwindle down for the NHL and the future markets.
Really good stuff, Josh. And you wonder if the Oilers can do what the Panthers did, right? Lose in the Stanley Cup final and see if they can the way back.
That's it. You have to take some lumps in the run to win 16 games in the NHL.
No doubt about it. Again, follow Josh on X at @covers_Josh. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our tools and content at VSiN.com. Best bets each and every day from all of our show hosts, experts and analysts, betting splits, exclusive articles, and so much more, including the new and improved NFL betting guide. And Adam, you run VSiN.com. What's the latest on the website today?
Yeah, we cover some of everything over there. We got Zachary Cohen covering Wimbledon for us. He's doing a phenomenal job with that. We got Mike Somich, Ed Sehan doing horse racing. I've been writing up some stakes races here lately as well. Steve Mackinnon's NASCAR simulation. So we're not just a football network. We cover it all over at vsin.com. We got plenty of football content as well as that 2024 NFL betting guide recently dropping. And as I mentioned during our college football segment, over at vsin.com, August 1st, our college football betting guide drops.
I am so excited for that. Because, I mean, I think that has become kind of like another go-to. Just like you go get your Phil Steele or your Lindy's or your Athlon magazine or whatever. You get your VSiN betting breakdown with all of these big sports in the NFL and with college football as well. I think, too, for me as somebody who covers the sport for ESPN as a sideline reporter, I love looking at win totals to get perspective on how teams are projected to go. I think that can be more valuable than some of those FPI projections.
Right. And look, I mean, obviously, I don't want to, you know, downplay the significance of any of the other guides that are out there, and they are very good. They are very informative. But not only does ours come from more of a betting standpoint than a lot of the others, you know, we don't have to keep lines of communication open with coaches right. and make sure that we're getting sound bites and getting interviews and all of that. Like, we can give honest assessments in our college football betting guide of what we think about these teams, of what our VSiN analysts think about the upcoming season. So it's a very honest publication, which isn't always what you get with a lot of the other college football mags that are out there.
Be prepared for my write-up to be very high on the Utah Utes. Just going to throw that out there. Although anyone that listens to this show already knows that.
On the last day, right before the deadline?
Probably, yeah. Hours before midnight with a text from Adam. Stormy, did you forget something? No, I'll be better this time.
No, you're all good.
I vow.
You're all good. I just like to give you a hard time.
At least 48 hours.
At least 48. All right. I will hold you to that. Do we have to
things are happening.
So the line is over under 47 and a half hours. And I got to say, I think the over is a dog.
Oh, you know something that's funny about me is I am extremely time focused, right? Like, I do not want to be late anywhere to anything. I'm a 15 minutes early type person, which actually kind of sucks when you're 15 minutes early and most of your friends are 10 minutes late. That's right. Not, you know, you're just sitting around by yourself. And working in TV, everything is to time. So I always am so oriented when it comes to that. But if you give me a deadline, I don't know if this is a thing from college and high school where I put things off, and then at the last minute I cram.
Right.
I feel like that's how I am sometimes when I'm given a writing deadline. And that's been like my whole career. Whenever I have to write something, I work up to the last minute. I need to stop.
Well, it's funny you say that because, I mean, yeah, I got by in college by procrastinating, and I always felt like I did my best work when I had to, right, mm-hmm. when there was a time crunch. And that's what was kind of difficult with the NFL guide was – we got a lot of the content in early, the way that we kind of like staggered the deadline so that we could build it out, because our guide editor, Matt Devine, does an incredible job. It's a big lift, right? Our NFL guide, 84 pages. Our college football guide will be close to 200. It's a lot, right? And then we need to edit all those pages, you know, when we get the proof and all that kind of thing. So I had like all these staggered deadlines. And for a few days leading up to the guide release, I was like, I don't really know what to do. Like, so much of it is done already. It felt really, really weird to not be, you know, trying to push things through right there at the end.
Well, good for you for recognizing right? that's the way that you need to do things for yourself, especially because you're also writing all these articles and podcasting, coming on shows like this. Like, you have a lot on your plate at one time.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, I am very, very fortunate here at VSiN to have an excellent team. My senior editor, Zach Cohen, yeah. I couldn't do what I do without him. He's just a tremendous help, but everybody was a huge help with the NFL guide, not only with the promotional push on air and all of that, but so many contributors, right? Everybody took some time out of their day to send something in so that we had, you know, picks in the spreadsheet of all the division winners, all the playoff teams, all of that. Bunch of different best bets in the award markets as well. Like, it's so cliche, but it legitimately is a total yeah. team effort that does make it easier on me. But the commitment level that everybody here has to not only contributing to that guide, but also promoting it, I mean, that's the most rewarding part for me.
Speaking of which, use the promo code Lombardi now, and that'll get you a discount and an extra month of everything that we do here at VSiN in addition to the guide. But let's dive into some of the things that are in this bad boy. And there are a lot of great articles. You mentioned Steve Mackinnon and the betting trends. We have the general manager perspective from a guy like Michael Lombardi, and then comparing it with the numbers from Steve. And everybody did different write-ups. You specifically, in addition to just putting this whole thing together and managing everybody, have specific write-ups for divisions. You did the AFC and NFC North, and the AFC North is a division that we all talk about so much as being the most difficult in football right now, top to bottom. Obviously, the Ravens were the top seed in the AFC last year. You have a Cincinnati Bengals team that's bringing back Joe Burrow healthy, that a lot of people think could be a team that goes from worst to first. The Steelers have Russell Wilson coming in at quarterback and a lot of offensive weapons. Arthur Smith leading that group as a coordinator, but a really tough schedule. And then what are the Browns going to be? We know defensively they should be really, really good again, but Deshaun Watson is a major question mark at quarterback. I think this division is one of the more fun that we're going to follow this season.
Yeah, and selfishly, by being the managing editor, I can do things like give myself this division to write about. No, not only, and look, I am a Browns fan, like, but I'm...
You go ahead, Tyler, take the NFC South.
Right?
I'll be here with the AFC.
Yeah, I don't know if he picked up on that or not. Hopefully not. But yeah, look, I mean, I am a Browns fan, but I am very impartial, if not jaded, if not deeply scarred by this team. And I will tell you, and I think people will agree with me, and this was kind of talked about last year, this is maybe the best roster in the AFC outside of the most important position on the field, which makes it exceptionally difficult to try and gauge what this team is going to be. Because, I mean, last year, Deshaun Watson, they were 5-1 in his six starts. But it wasn't because of him. He was sacked 17 times in those six games, had a 7-4 touchdown interception ratio. They lost Nick Chubb in week two. They were still a playoff team where Kevin Stefanski won Coach of the Year because of how good the rest of the roster is. I mean, they used five different starting quarterbacks last year, and the rest of the roster is so good, they were able to find a way to overcome it. But I think Deshaun Watson playing 17 games is a hindrance for this team. I don't think he's an average quarterback anymore. I certainly don't think he's above average. I think he's a below average player. So how much does that negatively impact a team that is very, very good pretty much everywhere else? And especially in a division where Lamar Jackson's the reigning MVP, Joe Burrow's obviously an MVP caliber player when he's healthy, and Mike Tomlin, the running joke here that we have on the network, never had a losing season. Nobody in the NFL gets more out of his respective team than Mike Tomlin does. And honestly, despite the difficult schedule, and it's really bad after the bye week, they play at Washington, they play all six of their AFC North games, they also play at Philadelphia and host Kansas City. The schedule is miserable. But if they were going to just go ahead and start Justin Fields and not play around with Russell Wilson, I would probably talk myself into an over bet with the Steelers. So this division is loaded.
If their schedule wasn't so backloaded, Pittsburgh, I would have liked them to go over their 8.5 win total again. But it's just the way that you have to go through that gauntlet at the end of the year that makes it so challenging. And the odds have shown you as much to where it was, I think, minus 125, minus 130 to the over prior to the schedule release. And now that's a plus money price.
It was what, minus 165, I think, when we released the guide for under 8.5. And not only that, I mean, you think about it in easier game against Denver in week two. Denver historically is very, very good at home in weeks one and week two. Why? Because of the elevation. Teams aren't really up to game speed yet. You know, guys don't play in the preseason anymore, as we know. So an easier game, so to speak, a game where Steve Mackinnon does have Pittsburgh favored on the road against Denver, the elevation is such a huge handicap in the first 2 weeks of the season that even that game looks dicey for Pittsburgh in a situation where if you want to bet over 8.5, you have very little margin for error based on the back portion of that schedule.
And again, it's so crazy too that you think about this team making the playoffs last year despite having Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. They upgrade on paper at least that position, a guy you think that can operate that offense much better. But it's just going to be such a tough go for them the year.
And Art Smith is a huge upgrade as the offensive coordinator. Not a great head coach, but a huge upgrade as an offensive coordinator.
Meanwhile, we talk about all these other teams. In the guide, you have the Ravens winning the division and they're over 10.5 wins. What did you like most about Baltimore?
Yeah, I just think, you know, and this kind of comes from the baseball mindset that I have. I really give a lot of the benefit of the doubt to smart organizations, organizations that are very, very well run. Baltimore, it almost doesn't matter who walks out that door. They find somebody to step in and play really, really well at a lot of different positions. Their talent evaluation staff is incredible. This is the type of team where, like, they take a guy in the fifth round and by his second year, like, he's a full-time starter. You know, they're just so good at evaluating players at all different levels on offense and defense. And it's hard for me to want to pick against that. I mean, John Harbaugh is such a good head coach. Obviously, Lamar Jackson's a dynamic player. We'll see, you know, Derrick Henry. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on those tires. But, I mean, this was a team that was, you know, top 10 in both offensive categories, rush EPA and dropback EPA. We know the defense is pretty good year in and year out. And honestly, you know, they had Mike McDonald as the defensive coordinator. He's already a head coach in his 30s. 32-year-old Zach Orr will be the defensive coordinator this year. Another smart, young, you know, a thoughtful mind on the defensive side. I think the Ravens are going to be really, really good again.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout. When we return, in addition to the AFC and NFC North, Adam has made his picks on each and every division across the National Football League this year. Why this team in the NFC West could be a hot dog. Worth a look. See what I did there? Support the July joke. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The wait is over. Our VSiN NFL betting guide is available now. Make this NFL season your best ever. The guide is jam-packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and new head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best future bets in various awards markets, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, the list goes on. Whether you are a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Head to vsin.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That's vsin.com/guide. We're wrapping things up on this 4th of July holiday alongside Adam Burke. In for Michael Lombardi today, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and it is time for our pro tip of the show. We do these each and every day. Every show here at the network does. It's searchable on vsin.com by sport and by show. But this was a great tip from Josh Ingles, who joined us from covers.com a little bit earlier, talking about an approach to getting in on MLB plays each day.
Yeah, so you know the player prop markets, as he mentioned, they're pretty soft. They're not exactly all that efficient. So Josh mentioned, you know, if you're betting MLB player props, bet them early in the day because they are soft. You can get good closing line value if you place your bet in the morning, and that makes a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of times what will happen is you'll see line moves after the lineups are announced. A lot of that is the modeling crowd, the spreadsheet crowd. They're able to actually put the lineup in against the starting pitcher, run their numbers, run their scripts, run their systems, and then bet accordingly. So if you can get in on some of these props before the lineups are announced, that's a good opportunity for you to get some closing line value.
So do all your research for props so you can make those bets early. Head to vsin.com, read Adam's daily article, and then you're going to be set for the day. It's that simple. That's how we got to start things off.
I've tried to incorporate more player props into the mix this year, in part because I know a lot of people do like to bet them, in part because I do think some of those markets can be a little bit more beatable than, you know, playing full game sides and totals or even derivatives, the first five sides and totals. But this baseball season, I've had a hard time getting into a groove here. It's been one of my weaker baseball seasons, and it's been extremely frustrating because, look, if you're having a bad football season, like, football's played once a week.
Right.
Baseball, there are 2,430 games over the course of the season. So there's really no break if you're not doing particularly well, trying to recalibrate and all that. So full disclosure, full transparency, which is important to us over at vsin.com. It's been a tricky baseball season for me.
Do you, when things like that happen, and like, let's say that you're going through a rough patch, I know for me, maybe it's not taking a break from the sport as a whole, but if I cannot hit a total to save my life, I just take a break from totals for a while. I'm like, okay, clearly my radar is off right now when it comes to this. I'm just going to stick to sides, or I'm going to stick to props or whatever it is. Do you ever take breaks?
I mean, I don't do the article on Sundays. That's kind of my day of reset. Rest, day to clear my head, reset a little bit. Also, it's kind of a timing thing too, right? Living in Pacific time, there's a lot of games that are 10 o'clock a.m., you know, Pacific time. So it's important to me to be able to give as much lead time as possible to put that article out. I do write a Sunday Night Baseball preview for that game over at vsin.com. But yeah, it's, you know, you just, in my case, because it's so much about interpreting and analyzing data, maybe I'll kind of change some of the stats that I'm prioritizing, okay, weigh things a little bit differently, stuff like that. You know, sometimes take more of a micro approach to a handicap. Like, for example, the Tampa Bay Rays, a lot of their starting pitchers like to work up in the zone with fastballs. Aaron Civale, who just got traded to Milwaukee, is a guy who was doing that. So, like, I would pick on him against teams that hit the high fastball well, because he just didn't have great command, doesn't have great velocity. But other teams that don't hit the high fastball well, like, maybe I would back him and he'd be a little bit undervalued. So I kind of started looking at it on more of a micro level with certain guys and certain teams. So, you know, it's all about trying to adjust and, you know, find something where you can get your edge back.
Last few minutes here, let's go back to a little bit of NFL talk, because we talked a lot about the AFC North last segment. You also did a write-up for the NFC North where you have the Lions repeating. They won their first division title last year for the first time since 1993 when it was the NFC Central, so it had been a hot minute. They make it all the way to the NFC title game where they ultimately probably should have won but fall to the San Francisco 49ers. You have them repeating again and going over their season win total.
Yeah, I like this Detroit Lions team a lot. And Matt Brown, who obviously we're both very familiar with here, used to do a show with him. And you know, I did Sharp Money a couple days this week with him. We both like Jared Goff 40-1 to win the MVP. And I realized that Goff had a really good season last year, didn't get a whole lot of love, in fact, didn't get a single MVP vote. But I think people kind of looked at it maybe as a bit of a fluke. We're kind of like, you know, maybe this is just kind of a one-off year, a flash in the pan type of thing. I think if he's capable of repeating being basically a borderline top five quarterback in the NFL, I think he will kind of get his flowers, will kind of get his due a little bit. The schedule is terrific for the Lions here. Not from an opponent standpoint necessarily. It's kind of middle of the pack when you look at Steve Mackinnon's strength of schedule ratings, when you look at, you know, season win totals against them, stuff like that. But they play 14 of their 17 games inside. We all know Jared Goff is awful outside. When the weather is remotely not perfect, he's not very good. But he only has one game in truly bad weather. That's going to be December 22nd at Soldier Field in Chicago. His other two outdoor road games, Green Bay in early November, should be maybe chilly, but fine. And then against your 49ers on December 30th. So Goff's schedule sets up really well for him to have a good season. They're going to score a ton of points. The skill position guys are very dynamic. The defense maybe improves a little bit. But again, last year they were a really good team, and the defense was average to below average. So I think the Lions are going to be an extremely good team this year.
I was going through some of your guide division predictions, and you do have a couple interesting ones. For me, most notably, as we've referenced a couple times now in the last minute or so, my San Francisco 49ers, I am a big fan, have been my entire life. In the NFC West, across the board of our 21 experts, analysts that have contributed here, 20 of them said that the San Francisco 49ers were going to win in the division yet again. There was one rogue lone wolf going elsewhere, and it was you. You like the Rams in the division this year. Why?
Yeah, this is a bummer because you already hate me today because of the hot dog eating contest thing.
And now
we got to talk about the Rams over your 49ers. look, I mean, when you have a 1-2 punch like Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, you're going to move the football. And the Rams were extremely, extremely good offensively last year when Kyren Williams was healthy and when Sean McVay and the offensive coaching staff kind of realized, okay, we can rely on this guy. He's a really, really good running back, averaged almost 100 yards per game in an era where teams don't really focus on the run as much as they used to. So this is an extremely, extremely balanced offense. You know, look, I know that they lost Aaron Donald. I get it. Aaron Donald is a generational type of player, maybe the best defensive player of all time in the minds of some people. But I thought Kobe Turner played really, really well on the interior of that defense. And in fact, when I wrote up the defensive rookie of the year piece for the NFL guide, I thought he kind of got cheated a little bit because Will Anderson was fine, but I thought Kobe Turner was really, really good, just overshadowed by, you know, having Aaron Donald on the roster. So I think he's a centerpiece for this defense. I like that they upgraded in the secondary. They needed an upgrade in the secondary, and they've done that here. I think the Rams have a pretty high ceiling for this season. The early-ish bye week in week 6 kind of concerns me, but this offense looks really, really good, and I think McVay kind of gets a little bit more out of everybody on that defense now because you can't just go, well, Aaron Donald's out here. He's going to blow up the play for us.
No, I agree. I was a big fan of what Kobe Turner did last year. I also like the way that the Rams approached the draft in focusing on defense with players like Jared Verse and Braden Fisk in the first couple rounds. I agree. I think the Rams are going to be good this year. I hope that they don't win the division, but I do have a bet on them to make the playoffs as a wild card at plus 120. I think you can get plus 130 as well some places. It's weird how, again, shop around. We talk about markets a lot. DraftKings right now, it's even money, but I've seen as high as plus 130 out there for that same bet. So do your due diligence from that standpoint. Another team I wanted to ask you about, you have the Houston Texans winning the NFC South. I think that Houston's going to be good again. They've done nothing but add and continue to build up that roster and surround their young quarterback with more talent. But I am curious about CJ Stroud after a full year of tape being out on him now, and now going from a last place schedule to a first place schedule, how that might impact them.
Yeah, I mean, the strength of schedule is definitely going to be different. But, you know, they exposed the Browns in that playoff game. And the Browns had, by a lot of metrics, the best defense in the NFL. And the reason why they were able to expose Cleveland is because they have a massive downfield passing threat. Most teams in the NFL don't have a great downfield passing threat. So they're a little bit easier to defend, right? You can kind of bottle them up a little bit. Yeah, they'll get yards in space, but they're not going to beat you deep down the field for big explosive chunk plays. The Texans will beat you down the field for big explosive chunk plays. And not only that, I mean, now you've got some new toys for CJ Stroud, Stephon Diggs specifically. And you also have a situation here where you got a guy in D'Amico Ryans, you know this, you know, from being a 49ers fan. The dude is a brilliant defensive mind. And I'm a Browns fan. I would not have been upset in the slightest if Ryans won the coach of the year over Kevin Stefanski, because what Ryans did with this team was thoroughly impressive. And I don't see a reason to believe that they regress really on either side of the ball. And there's a realistic possibility that they're better on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryans might have got fleeced a little bit last year in that market because he was poised to win it. But credit the Browns and what you guys were able to do with Joe Flacco down the stretch.
D'Amico Ryans also won over Stefanski when it really mattered in the playoff game.
Point well taken. This is a fun show. We should go get a hot dog and maybe a pickle in the bun on the way out, since I know you love that so much.
I will pass on the pickle.
All the
hot
condiments.
Dog, sure.
Put a ton of condiments on it and a pickle. You'll be living
How much? How much are you going to pay me to eat that?
Maybe we'll just have a friendly wager. Just see what we can, you know, little bets and consequences like Matt and I used to do. That could be fun. That's a wrap for today's edition of the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us. Enjoy the rest of your 4th of July holiday. We'll see you tomorrow.